Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to a Mouse Clubhouse Conversation.
Hi, this is Scott Wolf, and this conversation is with Dave Smith. I remember the first day I met Dave. I began working for the Walt Disney Company in 1988, and it was on my first day on the job during my orientation that I met him. A tour of the archives was not only the most memorable part of the day, but for me, it was life-changing. We were told that the archives was open to us as employees, and I made it a point to take full advantage of the opportunity to visit the archives often and to visit with Dave. I continue to keep in touch with Dave, particularly on each October 13th, both of our birthdays, and I had the opportunity to work with Dave when I wrote the This Day in Disney daily column for the D23 website. He read each one of my articles to ensure factual accuracy. By the way, he once told me he only found grammatical errors in my work, but never a factual error. That's something I'm very proud of. Dave played a huge role in Disney history as the founder of the Walt Disney Archives. June 22, 1970 is the official date that the archives was established, and here's a little trivia for you. According to Dave's bibliography that you'll hear about in a little bit, when he first formed the archives, the company had made 903 motion pictures, 361 one-hour television programs, 78 Zorro programs, 260 one-hour and 130 half-hour Mickey Mouse Club programs, 1,220 comic books, 290 items of sheet music, 52 song folios, and 636 books about Disney characters. Dave's timing for the formation of the archives was crucially important because Walt Disney had passed away just a few years earlier, in 1966, and archives were just not something the studios had thought about in those days. Since that time, Dave continually developed the system for preserving Disney's history and making it easily accessible, a task that became increasingly more difficult as the company grew and acquired new properties. Dave also had a huge fan base, becoming a recognizable face and household name to Disney fans through his personal appearances at fan events and his appearances on television programs and documentaries. He effectively gave the public access to the archives through his priceless books such as the Disney Encyclopedia A to Z and his Ask Dave columns in which he'd answer questions sent in by the readers. I personally remember looking forward to those back in the 1990s. Dave remained as the chief archivist until his retirement in 2010. Although he continued to work with the archives in retirement, he remained a spokesman for Disney history, and he continued his Ask Dave columns online. To begin this conversation from 2007, I asked Dave if he was a Disney fan growing up. Here's Dave Smith.
I guess I was. I never thought of myself as one, really. I enjoyed going to Disney films when they came out, but I don't recall searching them. I went to cartoon shows. I was just as intrigued by Tom and Jerry and some of the other characters as I was by Disney ones. But I think I probably got more interested in Disney after the Disney's television show started in 1954. And I started watching that regularly and started realizing that Walt was building a park in Anaheim. And so that intrigued me, and I guess I got more of an interest then and wanted to go to Disneyland right after it opened, but my parents wouldn't take me. So they said, oh, let's wait a while until the park is running smoothly, and then we'll go. Well, in the meantime, my grandmother went, and I was so disgusted that she got to go and I didn't get to go. So I looked at the guidebooks and the things that she brought home, and I was so excited about it that I think it wasn't until 1956 that I finally made my first trip. But I think comparing me to Disney fans of today, I can't say that I was really a huge Disney fan. I enjoyed Disney, I enjoyed the movies, I enjoyed the park. But I didn't know a lot about Disney. I'd never read any books about Disney. And of course there weren't many in those days. So there wasn't a easy way to learn a lot about Disney history.
What were you doing before you worked for Disney?
I was a librarian. Oh. I got a library degree from University of California at Berkeley and was selected for an internship at the Library of Congress, so I spent a year and a half in Washington. Then came back to California. I got tired of the weather in Washington, and I also, all my family and friends were out here in California, so moved back here and got a job at UCLA in the library and worked there for 5 years. Well, I was sort of in the right place at the right time when Disney started thinking about doing something with their history. Walt, of course, died in the end of 1966, and that was while I was at UCLA. I got interested in doing a Disney bibliography. I had done several other bibliographies, and I thought a Disney one might be fun. And I contacted the studio, and they agreed to help me find the information I needed. And so I had some contact with the Disney company in the mid to late 60s. Finally finished the bibliography in 1969. But that was also the time that the company was starting to think, wow, Walt's gone for 3 years, his office has been shut up, we really need to do something about preserving his memories. And at the same time, UCLA had contacted Disney, suggesting that Disney deposit Walt Disney's papers at the library. Well, they had a meeting, and I sat in on this meeting since I'd had the contact with Disney before. And out of the meeting, it became obvious that what Disney was thinking of was not just the history of Walt, but preserving the whole history of the company, and that's not something that the university library could handle. So the librarian suggested that Disney consider setting up their own archives, which some other companies had done in this country. And sitting in the back of the room, that sounded like an interesting idea to me, and so I went home that night and wrote the Disney people a letter suggesting my services. They didn't have anybody on their staff that knew anything about archives or libraries, so I took a 2-month leave of absence from UCLA and did a survey of the whole company to find out sort of the quantity and the quality of the material that was available. And out of that, I wrote a proposal about what they could do with it. And I got that by doing a lot of reading on archives and also visiting business archives and places like the presidential libraries around the country. And the proposal went in around the 1st of January in 1970, and it took them about 6 months to figure out they wanted to go ahead with it. They finally decided, and they asked me to come and do it.
What did you find when you were doing your research initially?
A lot of departments had saved things, but nobody knew what anybody else had. And there were areas that there were major gaps in what had been saved. But I did find that there was an awful lot of material around, and it could make a very, very good start for an archives program.
Where did you begin once you started?
They gave me an office up in Walt's office suite in the animation building, the 3H wing. So I had an empty room and an empty file cabinet, and I said, start.
And what do you do? Did you just start
gathering? I just started gathering things. I went around the studio and found where everything was hidden, and a lot of things had been stashed away that nobody... The people that stashed them were no longer here, and nobody knew what was there. And so I found all sorts of interesting things. I also had to convince a lot of departments that the archives was going to be around for a long time and that we would take better care of their file sets than they were doing. So like the sets of all the books and the sets of all the records and the sets of all the sheet music and the sets of all the publicity photos and the sets of all the movie posters and that sort of thing.
What about correspondence and letters and things like that? Was that all part of it? Or?
Well, of course, the correspondence of Walt Disney was the basis.
Okay.
And yes, that had been boxed away in a basement closet in the animation building. So, and moved that into the archives right away.
What exactly is the archives, and how it pertains to the public or how it pertains to the employees?
Well, Disney is a company that reuses its past all the time. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people working for the company today have no knowledge of Disney's past, and then they are expected to work on projects that deal with Snow White and Pinocchio and Steamboat Willie and all sorts of things that they don't know anything about. So our job is to work with all the people within the company that have need for information from Disney's past that they can use for the current projects that they're working on. Now, we used to be open more to students and writers and others outside the company, but we've had to curtail that because the company's just grown so big,
right,
and the demands on our time are so great that we really cannot work with people outside the company anymore, at least having them come in and do research. Now, that doesn't mean we won't answer phone calls and letters if people have specific questions for us. We're glad to work on those. But there's a limit, of course, on what we can do.
Sure.
I mean, we can't write a kid's term paper for him.
There's ABC now, which is huge, Pixar, and when I was working there, it was even the Queen Mary and KCAL. What do you keep? How do you decide?
Well, we don't go back and collect the pre-history, pre-Disney history on any of our purchases. So ABC material we're collecting now, but we didn't go back and collect all the ABC history before Disney acquired ABC. And that's true with everything that we've acquired.
How do you decide out of Disney what to keep and what not to keep?
Well, we've just decided within the last year to expand our collecting on costumes and props, which we hadn't collected a lot in the past. And so we have got a new room for that, and are hiring a new staff member, and that will be a new outlet for archival work. What we're keeping is informational material. People come to us primarily for information, not to see things. So we're collecting from throughout the company publications and reports and correspondence and all that sort of thing that we'll be able to tell in the future what was going on in 2007.
So it's most important to keep things that really give you an idea of what's happening.
Correct.
Well,
and we've learned through the years what sort of things people are going to ask us to see. So some things that we're collecting a lot of back in 1970, nobody's ever asked to see, and other things that we didn't think to collect when we started, people were asking for. So we've had to adjust our policies depending on what our users need.
You were talking about correspondence. Do you try to keep the correspondence, for example, of Michael Eisner or even Ron Miller when he was there?
Material comes to the archives when it is no longer needed in the areas that created the material. Now, when you come to executive files, they are usually still in use, even when the executive leaves. So no, Eisner's files have not come to us yet, though I would think that someday in the future they will.
Isn't there a lot more email nowadays than...
Yes, and it's very hard for any archive to know what to do with emails.
Really?
The executive emails are being maintained on some sort of disk, but that is not something that's come to the archives.
Is there anything that excites you, things that you find that you get excited about?
Well, it's always fun to find something that fills in a gap in your knowledge of the past, whether it's an actual object or the recollections of someone that worked on that past.
Do you have a typical day? Is
no.
there no? It's always
and
different.
And you know, that's what's so fun about the job is that no 2 days are the same, and we don't know when we come in the morning what we're going to be doing that day. We may have one or two things on our calendar, but then it's all the other things, the emails that we get. Some will be a question that we can answer right off the top of our head. Others, we may have to go do 10 or 15 minutes of research or maybe more to find an answer. It depends completely on what requests come to us, and they could come by email, they could come by phone, they could come by a letter, it could come by someone walking in the door and asking for something.
Now, last time I saw you, you were updating the official encyclopedia. It's called Disney A to Z, right?
Correct.
And that's the book that you've written.
Yes.
In case our readers don't know what that is, can you tell me about the book?
Well, I created the Disney A to Z encyclopedia originally in 1996, just so that we could make available a lot of the facts and information in the archives to people outside the archives, and so especially people within the company, so they could have a reference book at their own desks to look up information. But, of course, it's very popular outside the company, too, because there are a lot of Disney fans out there, and they like to have access to the facts about the company. So we did a revised edition in 1998 with the plan for a new one every 2 years, but that didn't happen. And it took 8 years before we had the third edition. It just came out in the fall. So it's pretty up-to-date right now, but we do update it monthly on the Disney website, Disney.com. So the first of every month, a totally new update is downloaded or uploaded or whatever.
Yeah.
I'm working on that every day. I mean, things cross my desk that give us new information on a release date of a film or the cast of a film, or when a park attraction is opening, and so I'm just constantly updating that, and then on the first, that goes online.
So this is something you're consciously doing. Every day you have to think, does this belong in the encyclopedia?
Yes.
Do you seek that information? Is that something that you have to do, or do people within the company deliver the information to you for you?
Usually me seeking it out. A lot of it will just cross my desk on a regular basis because we're on a lot of distribution lists, and so we get all the publicity releases on the films and so forth. Other times I might have to make a phone call or two to find out, for example, if a shop closed at Downtown Disney, I may hear that the shop closed, but nobody told me what date it closed, and that sometimes it's a little difficult to track down, especially with shops and restaurants. Attractions are news events usually, and openings and closings of attractions get noticed, and it's fairly easy to find the date. But it's not true for shops and restaurants.
When you started initially, did you ever think it would be a career of this length? Was that your goal?
You know, I guess that I expected that I would stay here the rest of my career. I didn't really know what to expect because I was going into a new area. I'd never been an archivist before. I'd been a librarian. And so this was dealing with different kinds of material than I was used to dealing with. I was used to dealing with books only. And suddenly I have phonograph records and photographs and posters and awards and all sorts of things. I had to quickly learn how to handle all this additional material.
Do you think the audience has changed from when you started? It's such a huge audience, and the fans are so intense, for lack of a better word. Do you think that's changed?
I think that part has changed, yes. There weren't intense fans.
Really?
In 1970.
Huh.
There were no annual pass holders at the parks. They hadn't come up with the annual passport yet. There were no Disney collector clubs. There were no Disney fan magazines or fan groups or anything. There was no internet.
Right. Yeah.
So it was hard for fans to even gather together to express their interest in Disney. And so there wasn't any organized Disney fan base in the 70s. That started in the 80s.
No kidding. I didn't know that.
When the first Disney fan groups got started.
Did it make your job any more difficult as far as more people want to know more things?
Yes.
Yeah. Do you have any favorite parts of your job?
No, it's just my favorite thing is the variety of it.
Yeah.
And getting to having the opportunity to meet and know so many of the Disney legends through the years, and, finding out what delightful people these have all been.
Do you think that's part of your job, is to inspire the current employees?
Yes, and not just the employees. I've prided myself through the years in mentoring a lot of young people that have a real interest in Disney, and I see in them the spark of interest that would be very valuable as a Disney employee or cast member. And so I encourage them in their desires, and so many of them have eventually come to work for the company in various capacities, and they're very productive workers.
Do you have some favorite memories of working for Disney?
Well, I think some of my favorite memories go back to my earliest years with the archives, because when I started here, Roy O. Disney was still working here.
Walt
Hub Iwerks was still working here. The Nine Old Men were still working here. And I got to talk with them and know them. And Roy, in fact, hired me on my spare time to compile the Disney genealogy.
Really?
And sent me on a trip around the country to visit with Disney family members and search out gravestones and cemeteries and all sorts of interesting things like that. So I really was fascinated by that work that I did for Roy, and I think he was very appreciative of it. I was able to show him my slides and go over the information I found not too long before he died.
Roy was an essential part of the company right from the beginning. In fact, initially it was the Disney Brothers company, wasn't it?
Correct.
What kind of a person was Roy?
Very modest. He didn't want to be in the forefront. And one thing that I hear a lot was that even though they started as the Disney Brothers studio, Walt was the one that forced them to change it to the Walt Disney Company. Well, that's not what Roy told me. Roy was very insistent that he didn't want his name on the company, and that he felt the creative brother should have his name on the company, and so it was his idea to change it to Walt Disney Productions.
We hope you've enjoyed this Mouse Clubhouse conversation. Thank you for joining us.